it most certainly has shaped and continues to shape the work that I do. So after I returned back to the U.S., I immediately went through the program to be officially licensed as a minister, and was licensed as a minister of social justice. And the majority of my work initially was in working with families whose children were murdered by police. So in Cleveland, Ohio, where I was born and raised, there were more than enough cases to keep me busy, unfortunately. That very first summer that I returned home, it was every weekend there was another family whose child was killed by the police and they were unarmed. And there was very rarely even an arrest of the officer. And even when there was an arrest, there was never a conviction. And so it became painfully clear that Black lives, Black bodies did not matter, that justice was far, far from us. It's a brutal cycle to march and protest with families, pray with them, and still to feel that there is no justice coming, and to lose a lot of hope in that process. And I was really blessed to be able to find the organization I currently work with now, which we're called Isaiah. And we are a coalition of institutions of faith, predominantly Christian institutions, but also a large population of Muslim institutions. And we work for racial justice and economic justice for everyone in the state of Minnesota. And so being able to work with this organization not only helped to utilize the tools that I had around how to be present with families and how to protest injustice, it also helped me to know the strategy and what to do behind the scenes in order to actually start to change policy. And as a communicator, I have been using my skill sets there to be able to figure out ways, research ways, study ways, and implement ways for us to talk to people across race and across income levels and across region in a way that actually makes more possible, that heightens people's sense of hope. And that is what folks need in order to feel like they can be empowered enough to take the changes, to make the changes that need to be made.
Minneapolis was the focal point in terms of the murder of George Floyd, which, you know, has shocked the world. What was your reaction to that, and what are things like there now?
It is a heinous thing for the folks in Minneapolis and the entire world to witness a murder. And it is also a reality for Black people that is always a possibility to be harmed, to be hurt, to be under surveillance, to be brutalized, to be disrespected, to be harassed and humiliated by people who have sworn to protect and serve us. And so police have very rarely, if ever, been a point of safety or safe space for Black people and people of color in this country. And so as a person who has been through, again, many, many, many trials, has been with many families who have had their children, who have had their family members, their loved ones killed by police while they were unarmed. And mind you, there's also been many white people who were armed and were able to be handcuffed and taken to jail. But to witness that over and over again, it is heartbreaking, it is infuriating, it is demoralizing. But I want to note that something feels different about this moment.
I wanted to ask you that. Do you sense that, because there seems to be a momentum even across America, that this is another line in the sand?
Yeah, I do feel like things feel different. I am cautiously optimistic that we will make actual, real, systemic changes. Of course, the fact that everyone witnessed this murder is one thing, but quite frankly, we've witnessed a lot of murders. We've witnessed Philando Castile, which was also here in Minnesota. We witnessed the murder of Eric Garner being choked to death. We've witnessed murders by police before. But the fact that
the video went viral and people saw 8 minutes of somebody pleading for their life, we're watching somebody being tortured to death, literally.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think it was the fact that we actually watched the torture. And many of our hearts broke as we listened to George Floyd plead for his life, call out to his mother, for many people around these four officers begging them to let him breathe. And I think we've all begun to reckon with the idea that events like this probably happen way more often than we'd ever care to think about. and that it, this just so happened to be caught on camera. And so the fact that people, again, had the audacity, the courage, the strength to get out in the streets and protest and declare that this was not right, and that we collectively across race, across religion, across region, are saying that we're not going to allow this to continue and that we're actually ready for concrete changes is a really beautiful thing. And I think there's a lot of calls. Initially, there have been a lot of calls for reform. And it's also being revealed that the Minneapolis Police Department has had 150 years of reforms. That particular agency was born out of being a slave patrol. And then we've had many iterations of them, you know, going through trainings, going through accountability processes and transparency processes and changing how they do paperwork, changing how they do certain policies. There have been 150 years of documented reforms, and we know that those don't work. You know, asking for body cameras, we thought that would change things, but now it doesn't. And so realizing that it's actually time that we have real conversations across this country about what it would look like and what it can look like for us to move our money, a lot of money. In Minneapolis alone, we put almost $200 million into the police force every year. What does it look like for us to move that money into proven ways to keep people safe, like making sure people have livable wages, making sure people have health care, making sure that people have safe and affordable housing? Like, those are things that really do create safe communities. Those are things that reduce harm. And then creating different agencies of intervention when harm is committed, that is not what we currently know as the police force, because they have broken their oath to us time and time again. They've proven that they cannot be trusted. They have completely lost the trust of the community. They've never really had the trust of the Black community, but they have now lost the trust of everyone else. And so it is really exciting to me, and it does give me an immense sense of hope to see that people seem to be really ready to watch and create some substantive changes.
Do you think that needs to be translated into votes, as George Floyd's brother called for, that if President Trump is reelected, your heart would sink substantially?
I mean, because I'm speaking from more of my official capacity with my organization, we don't necessarily say who folks should vote for, but we do say explicitly that we should be putting in leadership that is completely aligned with our values, and that we have seen this particular president incite violence time and time again, even on the people of Minneapolis, threatening to shoot us because things are taken from a store. It is heinous that we would have any person in leadership who would put pieces of property, brick and mortar, over human life. And again, this isn't even just about George Floyd and George Floyd's family, who absolutely deserves justice. It's about the countless people, over 1,000 people every year in this country are murdered by the police. To sweep that under a rug and act like it's not happening, to pretend that it's not predominantly Black people in which this happens to, that is the real and true crime of this country. And most certainly we deserve leadership who is about healing and who is about creating the space for us to have real honest conversations about our racialized violence here and to start to get us to a place where we create something new and different.
Do you think that leadership is coming from the Christian churches? Because there is a huge division as well in different both faiths, but in particular, you're a Christian, you're a minister in the United Methodist Church. Is that leadership coming there? Many Catholics feel it isn't in their church leadership.
Mm-hmm. It is most certainly a frustrating thing that we have so many people who recognize a holy creator who made each and every one of us, who declares that there are no hierarchies of human beings, and yet they don't see the hypocrisy of us creating hierarchies of people based on what we look like. And then likewise, knowing as people of faith, we actually have a call to do justice in the world, and not just be just, but to do justice. And so there are many folks of faith, many Christians, many Muslims, many Jewish people, of many other faiths than none, who have come together to push for change, to create new policies, to make something new. And there are still quite a few people who are silent. And
tell me about that distinction between not just to be just, but to do justice.
Yes, it's incredibly important because a lot of people think they can be just from their couch. They think that if they treat people nice in individual interactions, that is them doing the work of being just. And the reality is it is not. Biblically, we commit both individual and communal sins, and we have a responsibility and an obligation to be accountable to one another regarding that. And so it is going to take all of us to commit to doing all that we can to defend Black lives, to do all that we can to ensure that not one more body is maimed, murdered, humiliated on our watch, especially by those who have promised to, who have taken an oath to protect and serve us. We have an obligation and a joy to be able to create something new that doesn't do that, that allows people to thrive. And so I think people of faith are recognizing that things aren't the way that they thought they were, that their experience with police or that one cop who's really friendly to them is not a common experience for many, many people who don't look like them. So I think it is a good agitation. And my prayer is that people continue to awaken to that, continue to be agitated, continue to be burdened with that until we get to a point where we're really ready to make change. It is my conviction that we should not have peace at this time, that true shalom, that the real wholeness of peace needs to come when we are all afforded that. We need to figure out how to make things right before we can get comfortable again.